Happens in Idaho is a podcast following the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell. This podcast is hosted and produced by me, Kayla Waters, in correlation with my other podcast, True Crime Exposed. I have followed this case closely as it all came to an end here in Idaho, just 30 minutes north of where I grew up and currently live. I will be attending most days of Lori Daybell's trial at the Madison County Courthouse in Rexburg, Idaho. This is the area which the crimes took place, and this is the only location outside of Ada County that has access to the live stream of this trial. Each day, I will recap the trial for you here. Welcome to It Ends in Idaho, the Lori Daybell Trial. In this episode, we are going to continue with the testimony of Zulema Pastines. She underwent direct examination by the prosecution in our last episode, and now John Thomas is cross-examining her. He starts it off a little spicy, saying, "So just a little bit curious, your testimony this morning was dramatically different than this afternoon. Did you review any notes or anything at lunch?" And Zulema says no, her mood was just different this morning than it was this afternoon. And John asks, "Did you take any medications?" But Zulema says, "No, I did eat lunch though." John goes on to ask Zulema about her meeting with Lori at Melanie Gibbs' house, that first time she met her. He wonders if that was in relation to the Preparing the People conferences. And Zulema says no. Melanie Gibb would just have different people at her home each week. Sometimes they would talk about books, other times they would talk about food storage. And John says, "So you met Lori there and the two of you became friends over the year or so?" Zulema testifies yes. And then John asks if one of the things that connected Zulema and Lori was their faith. And Zulema says yes. John Thomas says, quote, "I don't want to say you're fairly active because those people go about once a week, but you and Lori and the other people you mentioned were very active. You would go to the temple quite often." Zulema says that they would. Zulema goes on to testify that her meetings with Lori were usually about a spiritual connection. And John notes that Zulema said earlier that Lori claimed she met Jesus or had this personal relationship with him. And John asks, "Is that something that sort of intrigued you?" Zulema says, "I wouldn't say intrigued was the word. That experience is the most sacred you can have. So I would say more amazed." Now John asks Zulema if she had her own personal experiences in the temple, and she says yes. He goes on to tell her that he reviewed her texts with Chad about these experiences, so he wants her to tell us about them. At this point, the prosecution makes an objection due to relevance, but the defense says that it's in relation to her personal spiritual relationship, and the judge overrules the objection. So the questioning continues. Zulema says that she does not recall the specifics of these texts, but that she did see herself once in a vision with a godlike being. John goes on to ask Zulema about the castings. He asks, "They were done spiritually, not physically?" And Zulema replies, "Correct." And he wants to clarify that she never physically harmed anyone or attempted to. And she says yes. John Thomas asks, "You were attempting to harm or bind the spirit of that person, right?" And Zulema replies, "Correct." He goes on to ask, "You were a light worker or someone who was working in a spiritual realm for the lighter side. Does that make sense to you?" And Zulema says, yes. She goes on to testify that she did not think anything was evil or bad about what they were doing. And John says, "Have you since then come to think it was evil or bad?" Zulema replies, "There are two children who have died and a mother and a father who have died. I would consider that evil, yes, sir." And John says, "You believe that your casting had a direct relationship to the children or the people who died." Zulema goes on to say, My belief is before Zulema can finish, John says it's just a yes or no question. But the prosecution objects, asking that Zulema can answer as she pleases. The defense says, I think counsel can handle their own redirect. Judge Boyce agrees with the defense, saying it was a yes or no question, and he asks John to re-ask. Zulema answers, not my work, but Chad and Lori's work, yes. Now John wants to know about Zulema's job, and she says that she is a job coach, so she trains people to do their jobs correct. And John notes that this is a fairly sophisticated job. Zulema says she doesn't find it sophisticated, but that it's just a hard job. And he says, you're more sophisticated than the people needing your help, right? Or they wouldn't need it. And Zulema says, I have more knowledge. John replies, what I'm getting to is that you're not a very gullible person, right? And Zulema says, I've always believed that I am the kind of person that believes in the goodness of people. And I believe that if I wouldn't do something, someone else wouldn't either. I try to believe that their intentions are always good. I have become a lot more cautious since meeting Chad and Lori, and my views have changed a little in regards to that. The defense asks, so when you met Chad and Lori, you thought they were doing good work? And Zulema says, I thought they were kind, loving, righteous, and law-abiding. John goes on to note the blessing that Zulema testified Chad Daybell had given her. John says it seemed like a pretty generic, run-of-the-mill blessing to him. And Zulema disagrees. She didn't think it was generic or run-of-the-mill. She thought it was more manipulative and very specific to her. After asking a few other questions, John Thomas asks to look at State Exhibit 54 that has been previously admitted. It's the diagram, and he asks Zulema, do you recall testifying about that? And she says yes. John Thomas points out that it's just a sheet of paper Zulema had turned over to the police or the prosecutor, but which one did she turn it over to? And she says, I believe it was the prosecutor. At this moment, John lets Zulema know, you don't have to look at them, as he gestures to the prosecution. Zulema says, they came to talk to me in Arizona with the police, so I'm not sure if I should say police or the prosecutor. And then John asks, you're the one who drew this diagram? And Zulema says, yes. Now John shows her Exhibit 54 and asks if she can identify that. She says yes and that she did draw it herself. And John asks, is that on the back of a receipt or was that a journal? And Zulema says it was her journal. John points out that there was some testimony about Zulema having information on the back of a receipt. Was this on anything that was presented today? And Zulema says no. While she couldn't recall when she wrote Exhibit 53 into her journal, she says that Exhibit 54 was put into her journal around the time that Chad and Lori were teaching about different levels. John asks, would this journal be something you would take with you to meetings and teachings? And Zulema says yes. Now John moves on to ask about the casting page. Zulema testifies that this was done around the time when they were doing the castings on Charles, and that would have been between March and July of 2019. These were the steps to cast out an evil spirit. So John Thomas asks Zulema to read this page step by step. At the top, it says order, and Zulema testifies, I believe I was trying to order the priesthood. Next, it says spell. Below that, it reads cast out, and John asks, what does that mean? Zulema testifies that she believes they were ordering the spirit to leave the body. I didn't catch what the fourth thing written was, but the fifth was burn. Zulema says, we wanted to make sure there was no option for another spirit to come in that 2-minute window, so we burned around then. John asks, is that a literal 2-minute window? And Zulema says yes. She goes on to testify that at the time she believed that. And John asks, but you believe it's a larger window now? And Zulema says, I don't believe anything that Chad and Lori said. And John asks, so you don't believe an evil spirit can be cast out? Zulema replies, I do because it was in the scriptures, but I don't believe that's what they were doing. The defense says, so they can be cast out, but just not by Chad and Lori, in your opinion. And Zulema says, I don't think Chad and Lori had the authority to do that, nor had the right intentions. So John moves on to ask what they would burn so that the demon could not get back in. And Zulema says that it would be done spiritually and verbally. So John asks, it had nothing to do with actual burning. And Zulema says, no. Underneath burning on this page, it reads escorted. And below that, it reads sealed. John asks Zulema to explain that. And she says that Chad claimed if the spirit was cast out, it would be escorted out. And then it would be sealed from the demon coming back into that body. Lori would be the one to do the sealing. Below sealed read dispel/banish. And Zulema testified that this would also be done verbally. After that, there's expel, eject, purge, and evict. Below evict, it reads cast out, get rid of them. And then it says forced to leave by official action, take away the right of being there. There's a few other little things written, as well as a Bible verse, Matthew 8:16. Now John Thomas asks, with casting, you never did this physically, it was just with prayer, right? And Zulema testifies, correct. At this point, Mr. Thomas says that he is about to go into another line of questioning, and he does have more cross-examination, but we are coming to the end of the day. So the jury is excused, and court will resume the following Tuesday at 8:30 a.m. Judge Boyce reminds Zulema, between now and when you come Tuesday, you are not allowed to review any other testimony that's been reviewed in this trial. With that, the first week of witness testimony concludes. Now we all go our separate ways for the weekend, and court is back in session at 8:30 a.m. on Tuesday, April 18th, 2023. Judge Boyce starts the morning off by reiterating that there is a conduct order in place inside this courtroom. He says this means no one can use any device to record images or audio from the trial. He notes that this court is starting late this morning because of an individual who has been disruptive in the courtroom. I'm not sure who he is referring to, however, I may have seen something about this on Twitter. Judge Boyce goes on to say that the bailiffs have been talked to, and while he is not going to name this individual, he is going to have the bailiffs remove them from the courtroom based on their conduct. Quote, so bailiffs, if you can identify this person and have them removed from the courtroom. At this point, the jurors are led in. Zulema Pastinas is also waiting in a witness room, and she is brought in as well. She continues her cross-examination testimony. John Thomas is the one asking the questions for the defense, and he asks Zulema if the topic of marriage had come up between her and Alex between the time they kissed in October and when he proposed on November 7th. Zulema says yes, Alex had told her he was looking to start a family and get married. She testified that after being proposed to on November 7th, the next time she saw Alex Cox was when he came down to Arizona to spend Thanksgiving with her and her family. After Thanksgiving, Alex stays down in Arizona with Zulema and they get married. John asked if this was on December 1st. She testifies that she does not want to give him the wrong date, but she thinks it was on December 1st. He replies, well, this is your wedding date. You remember your wedding day, right? Zulema decides to say at this time that when Alex made decisions, he always did it based on what Lori and Chad wanted of him. She gives the example of Chad giving Alex that patriarchal blessing, where he tells him that Alex will be moving to Rexburg, Idaho. Zulema says that the day after this blessing, Alex hopped on a plane and went to check out Rexburg with Chad Daybell. She says the other significant reason she's bringing this up is because when they got married, she told Alex she would not be moving to Rexburg because her life and her family and her work was in Arizona. She said Alex told her that he needed to call Lori and Chad to see what they wanted him to do. John asks, so he was calling them for advice. But Zulema testifies, I would say more like direction. At this point, Mr. Thomas hands Zulema evidence. On page 1, she reads texts between her and Chad. The first says, I woke up today and I heard a voice say I have made you mine, and it was a man's voice. Not my voice, I believe I'm on the right path and getting so much closer today than in the past weeks. So all you did for me worked. I'm starting to feel myself again. John asks, is this from you to Chad? And Zulema testifies, correct. She goes on to read more text messages that she sent to Chad, including one where she said she is leaving the world behind. The Lord has put a new yearning in her heart. All she wants to do is study and serve and go to the temple. Zulema continues reading more text messages she sent to Chad Daybell. She asks about different callings she would receive and if she would get what she called a second comforter. She also asked how she would know when to gather and when to go to the temple. John has Zulema read Chad Daybell's response. It says, I am so happy for you, Zulema. You are on the right path as a multiple creations person. You have received your calling intellection as well as the second comforter. Chad goes on to tell Zulema not to worry because she will know when to gather. In fact, Chad thinks she will be one of the first to gather. He ends this message by saying, you're a part of the team. John notes that number 60 is her response and asks her to read it. She reads, I have chills all over my body reading your text. That's the reason that the voice came to me saying, I have made you mine, because he already had. Oh, it's so amazing. Now John asks Zulema if she recalls having a shoulder injury in 2018. She says she does not recall this, so he has her view some evidence of texts between her and Chad. Zulema had texted Chad Daybell something about Merry Christmas and hoping that he is having a good time with his family. She goes on to ask him if she has weapons on her back because she feels like she's being attacked again. John asks her what she meant by that. Zulema testifies that Lori and Chad had taught any physical or emotional pain was brought on by other people, dark spirits attacking your body. So John asks if she believed that, and she testifies that she did. So John asks if this was an issue that resolved on its own, or if Chad did something spiritually for her to help. Zulema says she does not recall. So John says, okay, let's keep reading. Zulema now reads a text message sent from Chad Daybell to her that is presented in the evidence. Chad has said something along the lines of him removing Zulema's attacks and that she would be feeling better soon. As John questions her about this, she continues to say that she does not recall this conversation. So John has her continue reading the text stream between her and Chad. Next, Zulema reads a text that she sent to Chad saying that her shoulder was feeling much better now that he had removed the attacks on her. John now says, so in that 15-minute span, you felt like your shoulder was healed. Zulema testifies, I felt better apparently. She goes on to say that at one point she did think they were all doing good work. She now believes the intentions were dark and evil. John asks, so your intentions were dark and evil. She says, no, sir. I believe that Lori and Chad's intentions were evil. John asks, they were evil by telling you they love you. They were evil by telling you you did such a great job. Zulema testifies, no, sir. I don't believe those things they were saying were evil. Manipulative, definitely. I think the result of all of this was evil. Now John has Zulema read more text messages between her and Chad. She reads, "Hi Chad, how are you? I wanted to tell you that I've been given a new weapon of light fire. I've been practicing it and using it this weekend. I've used it all weekend, quite a bit to heal the girls when they were attacked." Now John asks Zulema if she had a portal in her room, and she says she has never had a portal in her room. The defense points her to item 126 in the evidence and notes that this is her speaking to Chad Daybell. John does not have her read this out loud, but he does ask if she did not believe this. She testifies at the time she did believe this. And John says, "So you believed that Charles had a dark spirit in him?" And she says, yes, she believed what Chad and Lori told her. Now John moves on to ask about item 69 in the evidence. This is Zulema talking with Lori and telling her that she is on her way to the temple. In these texts, Zulema tells Lori that she will be in the celestial room. She'll later text Lori and say that while she was in the temple working on Charles, she was told that he will be taken as he is. She does not know what this means. Zulema goes on to read that then she was shown to only put the light and the brightest light from the top and the bottom together at the same time, meeting in the middle. It reads, "So I've been doing that all day. 7:11. I hope that it's a good day for all of this to end. Remember, Charles dies on July 11th. 7:11. John notes that Zulema went to the temple around 9 a.m. and he asks if you're allowed to bring your phone in with you. Zulema says no. She goes on to testify that day she was casting out Hiplos from Charles. She says that she was supposed to be meeting Lori at the temple that day and they were going to work on him together, but Lori never came. John now asks if she recalls another time where she went to the temple in Phoenix, Arizona, and she saw some heavenly beings in the celestial room. Zulema testifies that Heavenly Father, Heavenly Mother, and Jesus were all there in the room with her. John asks if she recalls what happened on that day, and she replies, "No, sir." At this point, John Thomas actually laughs as he says, "You recall that you saw Heavenly Father, Heavenly Mother, and Jesus in the temple, but you don't recall what happened." There is a long pause, at least for 30 seconds, if not more. And that might not seem like a long time, but a courtroom going completely silent for that long seemed to drag on forever. When Zulema finally goes to answer the question saying, John cuts her off and says, "Throw out the question, Judge. We have no further questions." Now Rachel Smith stands for the prosecution to ask some redirect questions. She asks Zulema if she needs a minute or if they can proceed. Zulema says they can go ahead and proceed. So Ms. Smith asks if when she was testifying about seeing the good in everyone, she tried to see the good in Lori. And Zulema testifies correct. Rachel then points out that the exhibit that the defense had admitted as evidence was from a cell phone extraction because Zulema allowed the police to take her phone and download it. She then goes on to ask Zulema about the text messages presented. She says that this evidence was very typical of her and Lori's conversations, and Zulema says, yes. Ms. Smith then says, "For example, at least 14 of these texts Lori calls you a goddess." And Zulema says, yes. Rachel also says that Lori would ask Zulema about her powers and her ability to influence. She goes on to say that these conversations were the same face to face. And Zulema says, yes. She told me I was very special and that my mission was the most important one. Rachel then asks, "Chad would also call you a goddess of the earth?" Zulema testifies, yes. She goes on to testify that Chad also told her she was very special, and he identified for her a special mission. Rachel says, "They would reiterate this to you in text messages, correct? How special you were, how important you were. How did that make you feel to have this constant validation?" Zulema says, "It made me feel very good and very special. I started to believe it." Miss Smith then asks Zulema if it made her feel empowered. She answers yes before the defense objects, saying that the prosecution is leading the witness. The judge says that the question has already been answered, but that it is leading. So Miss Smith slows it down, asking, "My question is, if Chad and Lori made you feel special and empowered, did you see that they did this with other people?" And Zulema says yes. Then she's asked if she saw the same pattern with Alex, and she says yes. And then Rachel asks for an example. Zulema testifies that Lori and Chad had told Alex it was him who had come to Saul before he was Paul, and made him blind to convince him to be more calm and become a follower of Jesus and change his ways. This must be a scriptural reference that I do not understand, but Zulema also says that Chad and Lori told Alex he was an angel, one of the angels that appeared to the prophet Joseph Smith. She goes on to say that they told him he had been exalted with his wife named Holly in a previous life. If you listen to the audio from Alex's patriarchal blessing given by Chad, you would have heard those statements about this wife named Holly. Zulema says that Chad told Alex he was a warrior, and that in another creation, he had unmasked Satan, and that is why Satan had so much animosity towards Alex. The prosecution asks, "So it was under the direction of Chad and Lori that Alex quit his job, packed his belongings, and moved to Rexburg, Idaho." Zulema testifies, yes. In fact, she says Alex even left a lot of his belongings behind and broke his lease. She goes on to testify that Chad and Lori had told Alex the sole purpose for his life on earth was to protect Lori. After Zulema testifies that Alex believed everything Lori and Chad told him, Miss Smith says, "Thank you. I have no further questions." Finally, Zulema's testimony comes to an end, and she is excused from her subpoena. Once Zulema is led off the witness stand, the state is now allowed to call their next witness, and they call Lori's oldest son, Colby Ryan. Rob Wood questions Colby for the prosecution. He starts by asking, "How do you know the defendant, Lori Vallow?" And Colby states, "She's my mother." Rob Wood asks that the witness be shown State Exhibit 6 and 4. This evidence has been previously admitted, and Rob asks them to have it published to the jury. He asks who that is in picture 6. Colby is crying as he goes to say, "That's my sister, Tylee Ryan." Then Rob asks, "What's the specific relation?" And Colby says Tylee is his half-sister. Then Rob asks about Exhibit 4. Colby testifies this is his little brother, JJ Vallow. He is again asked what the specific relation is, and Colby testifies that JJ is his adopted brother. Colby keeps sniffing through his entire testimony. Rob asks who Charles Vallow was, and Colby says that was his stepfather for about 13 years. Colby testifies that Lori had called him on the day Charles Vallow died around 2 or 3 p.m. Colby was at work, and he says that Lori told him Charles had died from a heart attack. At 7 p.m., Colby goes over to his mom's house. Tylee answers the door and goes in for a hug. Then Colby walks in, and he sees Alex Cox watching TV with a white bandage on his head. Colby testifies that he asked Alex why he has this bandage on his head, and Alex said it's because he got hit in the head by Charles with a bat, and then he shot Charles. this is the first time Colby heard Charles was shot to death. Colby testifies that his mom's demeanor was calm that night. A few weeks later, Colby says he had a conversation with Lori about how she was not the beneficiary of Charles's life insurance. Rob Wood asks if it was his understanding that she believed she was the beneficiary until after the death of Charles, and Colby testifies yes. He is then asked by Rob if he knows who Tylee's father is, and Colby says yes, it was Joe Ryan. He testifies that Joe died sometime in 2018, and he knew Tylee received Social Security from her dad's death. But the defense objects, and the judge sustains this objection. So Colby goes on to testify that he received money through Venmo from Tylee. Following that, he testifies about a text conversation he had with Tylee on September 8, 2019. He had asked Tylee for money, and the defense objects, saying hearsay. It's overruled under Rule 804, evidence of a material fact. So Colby goes on to testify that Tylee told him she was no longer in control of her money and that their mom, Lori, was handling it. Colby also spoke with his mom that day. She indicated that they were at the Yellowstone National Park gift shop. He could hear Tylee in the background. Lori told Colby that she was going to be using Social Security from Tylee for their bills and their life until Lori was able to find a new job. On September 27, 2019, the Gilbert Police Department out of Arizona call Colby to ask him if he knows where JJ and Tylee were, but he did not. He testifies that he had already been concerned about Tylee's whereabouts before this, because while he had been texting her lately, it had not seemed like she was the one talking. She wasn't using her regular mannerisms of texting, and he hadn't thought he had been talking with Tylee Ryan. Lori told Colby shortly after Charles had died that she was going to get married soon. And once the police visit on September 27th, he calls to ask his mom what was going on. Why are they looking for the kids? Colby was aware that Lori had moved from the Phoenix area, but she would not tell him where she was. She initially said she moved somewhere cold, but it was dangerous for her to tell anyone where she was going. Rob notes that Colby talked with his mom on November 27, 2019. This was the day before Thanksgiving. And then he asks Colby what happened the following day when he tried to contact his mom on Thanksgiving. Colby testifies that Lori Vallow's phone was disconnected. The state has no further questions, and now Judge Boyce calls for a mid-morning break. As the morning break comes to a conclusion, but before the jurors are brought back into the courtroom, Judge Boyce notes that they have been discussing an issue in the back. The issue was with scheduling witnesses because the defense was also going to call Colby as a witness for their side. So now Judge Boyce is going to allow a little more scope with that in mind. This means that while the defense cross-examines Colby, they're able to move a bit outside of just what the prosecution brought up. And then afterwards, the prosecution will have a chance for redirect. Once this issue is addressed, the jurors are led back in, and Jim Archibald will be conducting the cross-examination. So far, we've only seen John Thomas conduct cross-examination, but Jim Archibald is Lori's main attorney. So I believe that this is because John was in charge of cross-examination while Jim was in charge of the defense's case. And since the defense planned to bring in Colby as a witness, it's likely that Jim had planned on questioning Colby. So Jim starts off by asking who raised Colby, and he says his mom. He's then asked about a stepdad, and Colby replies that he did have a stepdad, Joe Ryan. And he's asked if Joe ever adopted him or if he just uses that surname. Colby says he doesn't know. This is in reference to Colby's last name being Ryan. Joe Ryan, Tylee's father, is not Colby's biological dad. Colby Ryan's dad is still alive, but was not involved in his life. Mr. Archibald then asks Colby if he is single or married, and he replies married before testifying that he has two children, ages 4 and 1. The defense asks if Lori has ever met them. The prosecution has an objection due to relevance, and the defense says it's foundation, so the judge overrules this objection. Colby testifies that Lori did meet his oldest daughter. He goes on to testify that he is 6 years older than Tylee and he's unsure of the age difference between him and JJ. And then Jim asks, was early childhood with Joe Ryan and your mom good or bad? Colby testifies, bad. The prosecution has an objection, again due to relevance, but this objection is overruled. So Jim asks, without going into details, did your stepdad abuse you? And Colby testifies, yes. There's another objection from the prosecution noting relevance. And then Rob Wood says, I think we need to approach. So the counsel has a sidebar with the judge. Afterwards, the judge sustains this objection and Jim has to move on. So he asks Colby, did your mom protect you from Joe Ryan? Colby says, mm-hmm. Before Jim asks, was she able to help you through those struggles? And Colby says, sure. Then Jim asks if Lori helped him through athletics in his teenage years, and he says yes. Then he's asked if him and Tylee struggled with depression, and he says yes. There's an objection from the prosecution, and it's sustained. Then Jim asks if Colby had suicidal thoughts. But again, there is an objection from the prosecution, and Judge Boyce sustains it. So Jim asks Colby, did your mother encourage you to do good things in your life? And he says yes. So Jim asks, did she encourage Tylee to do good things? And Colby says, I don't know. He moves on to testify that he moved out at age 17 and he moved to Kansas to live with his uncle, Adam Cox. He later moved back to Chandler, Arizona with Charles and Lori. He did not graduate high school, but he did get his GED. It is the same for Tylee. Colby then goes on to say that he went to Chandler Gilbert LDS College. And at 18 years old, he decided to go on an LDS mission. He was assigned to Nampa, Idaho. Ironically, Nampa is within 30 minutes of Boise, Idaho, where Lori Vallow's trial is being held. Colby testifies that he was only on this mission for 6 weeks before he decided to come home. For reference, a typical LDS mission for males is 2 years long. So Jim asks, was your mother supportive to go and then to come home? And Colby says yes. Jim Archibald asks, did she teach you about Jesus? Colby says yes. And then he's asked, did you sing songs about Jesus? And Colby says, at church. Jim says, did your mother teach you to believe in Jesus? And Colby testifies, she built a foundation. Then he asks, did she teach you about multiple lives? And Colby says no. Jim says, did she teach you about multiple lives? And Colby says no. He goes on to ask multiple questions. Did she teach you that you were someone else in a previous life? Did she teach you about zombies? Did she teach you about casting out evil spirits? Did she teach you about light and dark skills? And Colby answers no to all of those questions. Then Jim asks, did she teach you about vibrations? Colby says she did say stuff, but she didn't teach it. Lori had told Colby that her and him had the same vibrations. Then Jim goes on to ask more questions. Did she teach you that she was a goddess? Did she teach you that she was a leader of the 144,000? Did she teach you that the LDS church was wrong? did she teach you that you should become a member of the Church of the Firstborn? Did she ever tell you that Jesus killed someone? Colby answers no to all of those questions. He goes on to testify that he was not living at home when Charles filed for divorce from Lori, and he was not at home when they reconciled. Now Jim asks, how was your relationship to Alex Cox? Colby testifies, minimal. So the defense asks, how would you describe him? And Colby says, odd. Now Jim asks, was he always odd? And Colby says, he was crude and kind of funny and odd. So Mr. Archibald asks, what did you think of the relationship between Alex and your mother? And Colby testifies that Alex did not come around until Colby's wedding, which was in 2018. Now Jim goes on to ask Colby if he wrote a book since this case started, and it's called The God Over Odds. Colby testifies yes, before going on to say that it's about his testimony and about how Jesus got him through his life. And Jim asks, so Jesus is a good figure in your life? And Colby testifies yes. Now Jim reads a quote from Colby's book. This book is dedicated to my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ for always being there with me throughout my entire life. And Jim asks, who taught you that God was good? Colby replies, church and my mom. Another quote is read about how God is Colby's strength, and then another about how God knows us better than ourselves. And then Jim reads an excerpt from Colby's book, writing how he struggles with depression and suicide. The prosecution objects and Judge Boyce sustains the objection. Now Jim asks if Colby is suicidal now. He says no, but the prosecution objects and the judge sustains, asking the jurors to disregard the question and answer. Now Jim brings up some more quotes from Colby's book about God before saying, thank you, Mr. Ryan. I don't have another question. At this time, the state is allowed for redirect questions, and they ask for a brief 5-minute recess. Once this recess is up, Rob Wood stands to conduct the redirect. And he asks, since you moved out, has your mom asked you for money? But Colby says no. Colby goes on to testify that Lori did give him money and she really didn't ask him for anything except for to help them move. Then Rob asks, is your father still alive? And Colby says yes. So Rob asks, so you don't receive Social Security benefits for a dead parent? And Colby says no. And Rob says, okay, does your mom control your bank account? And Colby testifies no. So Rob asks, but you testified she's giving you money, right? And then he's asked, in fact, she gave you Tylee's debit card to purchase yourself a birthday present. Colby answers yes to both of those questions. He goes on to testify that Lori never asked him to come listen to any religious teachings by Chad Daybell or to be involved in any castings. Rob goes on to ask, when did you find out where your mom had moved to? Colby says that Lori never shared it with him. He didn't know until he saw it on the news on December 19th, 2019. He found out that his brother and sister were missing when the police had come to talk to him on September 27th, 2019. Mr. Wood asks Colby if Lori ever talked with him about a life insurance policy. And Colby testifies, yes, she had told him before that she had a life insurance policy in case anything ever happened to her. She also told Colby that he was the beneficiary. Tylee and JJ were alive, but she only listed you, is what Rob will ask. And Colby says, yes. He then asks Colby, do you know if your mom asked Tylee for money? And Colby testifies, yes. With that, the state has no further questions, and the defense has no recross questions. As Colby is set to leave the stand, the prosecution asks that he is not released from the subpoena at the moment, but that he can be released from the witness stand. Judge Boyce asks if the state is ready to call their next witness, and they say they would ask to publish State Exhibit 34B to the jury. It's been previously admitted as evidence without objection. Judge Boyce asks the defense, is there any objection to that being published? And Jim Archibald says, if they have any questions about the audio, then maybe they can call Mr. Ryan back. Quote, I know it was admitted previously, but I don't know why it wasn't played to the jury while we had a witness on the stand. Judge Boyce agrees, saying that it is unusual to just play an audio without a witness on the stand. The judge notes that once evidence is admitted, it is a part of the record, but the prosecution does need it to be tied in somehow. Rob Wood states, quote, Your Honor, it was already said that this was a jail phone call between Colby Ryan and his mother. The foundation has already been established. We asked he be kept under subpoena in case he had to be brought back in for questioning, but due to the nature of it, we would ask for it to just be published to the jury now. Judge Boyce decides to allow it, but only on the condition that Mr. Ryan be available for recall if the defense has questions for him. Now the audio is played, and I'll play it here. As the clip comes to a conclusion, the defense states that they have no questions following the audio. Colby is released from his subpoena.
Because you heard my son's father Ryan's talking to you, maybe you should understand
that. I didn't. I'm sorry that you felt that way.
You didn't do anything, right? I've prayed for you in my worst moments. I've prayed for my siblings. You swore to me you're okay. I thought I could trust you. I thought that you were a completely different person. I don't know
what
your worst
moment. I didn't pay attention to when you weren't there and you don't know what happened.
What happened?
Everyone's making their own judgments.
Mom, you've been shoving BS on my throat for a very long time. I'm gonna talk to you. Sweet, hey, listen to me. I'm not sad. Listen to me. Fine, listen to me. I sat there and prayed. I can't tell you the amount of pain that I have felt from your decisions. In Jesus Christ's name, it kills me to watch you sit here and tell me this is a trial. It kills me to watch you take the big punch route. This should have happened to you. When you are telling me that Chad Daybell came into your life, and all of a sudden, everything changes. And I'm talking about my spirit feels this. I'm great. I trust in you. I gave you every chance I could pass my limitations as a human being. I pushed past all of everything to try to get to you, to help my own mother. You lied to me, specifically to me, more times than I can count. To know that they're gone, and you knew, and my phone's being texted by my little sister, who's not even alive. My little brother, who's the sweetest little kid ever, for what purpose? If you tell me this is God's will for my whole family, including my stepmother, to be dead after everything you tried to tell me, you can tell me right now that Jesus Christ, the Savior of the world, is on your side. You tell me that with all conviction in your heart, that Jesus Christ is on your side. It's just me. I'm your host.
I love you. I always will. One day you will see it. One day you will understand.
Go ahead and
do that. I do love you.
That works great. You hang on?
I don't have anything else to say. You obviously don't know. You weren't there. You weren't there. Summer wasn't there. My mom wasn't there. The police weren't there. The FBI weren't there.
Nobody was there.
Yeah, and guess what? They know. They know exactly what happened. And they love me. And we are still together forever. They love me. And they are fine. And they do know the truth. And I know the truth. And we're the only people that do. So you can judge me, Kobe, all day long. Go ahead and judge me. The whole world has. The whole world has judged me.
Listen to me.
They don't know. And you don't know. You know what I've been through, and you don't even give a crap what they've been through. Nobody does. Except for me. I am the one that knows. I am the one that was in the hospital with Kylie for hundreds of days watching her suffer. I am the one that was there doing everything with JJ every day. I was the one who did it all these years.
You did it all to throw it in the garbage. They're not.
You don't know what happened. You don't know what happened.
It doesn't matter what happened if they're buried in your new husband's backyard. Tell me that that matters what happened. You tell me that you did this in Jesus' name, Mom. I have to hear that. You believe it and you are not afraid. Every witness, Christ, scream his name when he comes back. So you are that person.
I am that person. I am that person.
Christ.
And he will come back. Oh, yeah, Colby, because that's what it is. You don't even know. You weren't even there.
When I see you about Fatima in October, what did you tell me? What did you tell me? What lies did you feed me? Why would you lie to me if you were so, if you're with the Lord and you see me, and I'm just talking purely to you, if you see Jesus Christ, where's the fear? Why wouldn't you tell me something? Why were you afraid? Why is everyone against you? Why is everyone against my mom?
You can be against me. One day, we will all stand there with Jesus. We will all stand there with Jesus, and you will know the truth of everything.
Wrong for me, isn't it?
Not for me.
You're telling me that this was all done in light. Say it. Tell me that this was done in Jesus' name.
You don't know what happened.
Why? Why don't I know, Mom? Oh, because I was kept in the dark to protect me. You know who needed protecting? My little dead siblings. That's who needed protecting. This.
Where were you? I said that. That what you think you did?
You ran away.
I hadn't been.
A month later, you ran away. I never wanted you guys to leave. I would have taken those kids in 1 second. I would bring them into my home and I would have taken care of them. That's not even a question to me.
Yeah, everybody says
that. You can say that you
know. Everybody says that.
Says it now? Where was my offer?
I did everything for them.
For me, I had. We are ripping right away together in Hawaii. How about that? If you could offer me, you could know. You cannot sit here and lie.
That's not everything. That is not the truth. Okay? That's what people are thinking.
They
are assuming.
If you walk away.
So we will know. No, we will know that. No, that is not what happened. That is not what happened.
You tell me what happened. If you can tell me what happened, then I don't care. If you can actually explain it, then it's different.
I would love.
But you can't
talk to you about it.
Mom, you've been saying that you've been wanting to tell me for a very long time, and you never say it. You have no idea how much pain I have felt in my body. I feel like I could die. My own mom, my siblings, and my whole family, my dad, everyone is gone except for you, and you're in jail because of it. I have prayed to Heavenly Father himself and asked him to help me survive this. Do you understand the freaking earthquake that has been caused? Do you know how many people are hurt and broken now? And you're telling me that there's a reason? Why are you following Chad down the rabbit hole, Mom? Why would you follow anybody that is not good? How can you follow someone that cannot lead you to salvation in Jesus, huh? You can't lie to me anymore. You can't pretend anymore. You can't hide anymore. If you want to tell me what happened, I told you for that very reason. You had enough condemnation for the whole time in eternity, but you're telling me that you're going to stand in front of Jesus Christ and you're going to be fine. Then I'm still praying for you. I am still praying for you. I don't know where the lies in all these things are written. I don't see it. I never have. The light of Jesus Christ is the most powerful thing that's ever lived. It's the most loving, embracing thing that has ever happened to this world. And I pray that you see Him and fall into His grace. I pray every day. I pray no matter how mad I am at you, no matter how bad I want to hit your husband in the face with a shovel, I pray for you. I pray for him. You rip my heart out. You rip out everyone in this family's heart out. I'm going to be in Idaho this week. You need to look me in my eye, Mona. Look me in my eye.
This podcast was produced by True Crime Exposed and is hosted by me, Kayla Waters. Please leave us a 5-star written review as we are a new podcast, and help spread the word.